Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Professor Ruth Weiss. She is an expert in Jewish humor, and I mentioned last week how much Jewish humor is a part of who I am. As a matter of fact, I will tell you this. I will share this intimate detail of myself. Back when I was single, I would measure the compatibility of a woman and myself, with whom perhaps I'd started dating, by her ability to appreciate Jewish humor. I did that mainly because having a relationship with me, you might experience the same kind of incongruity that you experience in Jewish humor. So, once again, we're bringing Ruth Weiss to Common Threads and a little bit about Ruth. She taught Yiddish literature and comparative literature at Harvard. And before that, she was at McGill University in Montreal. She is currently senior fellow at the Tikva Fund. Her books include Jews and Power, The Modern Jewish Canon, and most recently, No Joke, Making Jewish Humor. We welcome once again to Common Threads, Ruth Weiss. Hello, Ruth.
Hi, hello. Good to be back here.
Thank you for joining us again. Yes, indeed. Last week, we spent a great deal of time talking about the humor that springs from the Bible, and I wanted to get a little bit more contemporary and talk about Yiddish humor in the early 20th century here in the United States and where it led. I want to tell you something, though. I didn't come up with a Jewish joke, but I had an experience that was extremely, extremely Jewish, and I didn't realize it until afterwards. You tell me if this isn't a setup for a Jewish joke. You could make this a Jewish joke, but honest to God, I was at an Asian restaurant with my wife and brother many years ago, about 5 years ago. And one thing that my wife and I share, aside from, of course, Jewish humor, I finally married a woman who could appreciate Jewish humor. I'd be on dates with women and I'd just mention something, tell a Jewish joke, and they just wouldn't get it. And I go, this can't go anyplace. Finally, I meet the lovely Teresa. And so we're at this restaurant, and my wife and I share this, besides Jewish humor, we share a tremendous aversion to cilantro. Okay. We just, neither one of us can take it in our food. And we love Asian food. So we always have to, whatever we order, we always have to say, please, no cilantro. So I find a dish on the menu and it looks appealing to me. So the waiter comes and I said, well, I'd like this dish. I said, and please, no cilantro. And he writes it down. Okay, I'll make sure. So he comes back a couple of minutes later to tell me that the dish doesn't come with cilantro, which I thought was earnest of him, so I asked him, I looked at him straight faced, paused for a second, and I said, well, is there anything else I can order it without?
That's very funny.
And of course, he looks at me, like I'm an idiot. And then I just tell
him. Your wife appreciated it?
Oh, very much so. Very much so.
That's great. Yes, well, that's sort of. I think you've got a. That's very funny, but I think. I'm not sure why I'm saying this to you, but I don't think that is a particularly Jewish joke. It's a wonderfully abstract and it's a very interesting joke, a kind of a sophisticated nonsense joke. But I have a feeling that could be characteristic of other cultures as well as Jewish culture.
Interesting. Well, thank you for that. So let's talk about the early
the early Jewish immigrants of the late 19th century, early 20th century, and Yiddish theater, and how that essentially grew into the comedians that I mentioned I saw on Sunday nights growing up on CBS. Because I know that there is a thread that runs through that. And, of course, it follows all the way to the many of the contemporary Jewish comedians and writers of today.
Yes. Well, it doesn't. It begins even further back than that. I think, you know, the most famous Yiddish writer is Sholem Aleichem. And as we said last time on your program, this is Sholem Aleichem's main character, or one of his main characters, Tevye the Dairyman, is the hero of Fiddler on the Roof. Now, actually, if you read the Tevye stories, and they are quite wonderful, they're available in very good English translation, Tevye the Dairyman. If you read them, you will see, I contend, one of my suggestions is that actually Tevye, as Sholem Aleichem created him, is the first stand-up comedian, because his stories are stories which he tells about himself, and many of them are stories that he tells about his own mistakes, how things go wrong, how he is asked by the butcher to come and see him. He thinks that he's coming because the butcher's interested in buying his cow. In fact, the butcher is interested in marrying his daughter. And so you get all these, you know, misunderstandings about, is it about the cow, is it about the daughter, and so forth. But in fact, Tevye is a really, really interesting character. He works through comedy, but the stories are increasingly tragic. And so you have a tragic drama which is being told to you by a comic character who insists on turning it into a kind of comedy. And that becomes really a very characteristic strain of Yiddish humor.
And that humor and that poignancy found a place on the American stage. It may have been on other stages, but what I'm familiar with is the Jewish theater, the Yiddish theater, in New York, and I'm assuming other places as well. But I'm familiar with the Yiddish theater in New York.
Right. Well, that it had that kind of humor, but also it had what was called the tumler. A tumler is a person who's making noise, who is creating havoc. And these tumblers became a fixture of the hotels in the Catskill Mountains, not far from New York, which these immigrants, you know, who lived in very crowded tenement buildings all year round, in the summertime, whenever they could really make enough money to be able to afford it, would go up to the Catskills and would go to one of these hotels. To say hotel, you think that, you know, the great ones like Grossinger's so forth, but really some of them were very small and modest hotels. And this is one of the things I learned when I was writing my book, one of the most interesting things I found out, that in fact there were hundreds of such hotels in the Catskill Mountains, what we came to be known as the Borscht Belt. And in fact, the main activity, or one of the main activities in this hotel, was providing comedy. And some of the comedians who describe this say, look, my uncle was running the hotel, and he said, listen, you've got to keep tumbling all day long. You've got to amuse the guests. Get their mind off the food and get their mind off the accommodations. So these guys, and there were dozens and dozens and dozens of them, they all had their start as comedians in the Borscht Belt of the Catskill Mountains in the early 1930s. And then when radio started up and radio needed professional people to keep going and talking and having, you know, being able to go without stopping, they hired these guys who were already professional comedians, because this is what they've been doing, you know, through the summer seasons, entertaining the guests. And from that came television, and the same phenomenon. Television needed these entertainers, and here you had a whole profession of entertainers who could do this, really. You see, so it's a very, very interesting kind of phenomenon. So that in the 1970s, if I'm not mistaken, about 75% or more of the professional comedians in the United States were Jews, and most of them came out of this Borscht Belt tradition.
That is amazing. You know, it reminds me of the Chitlin circuit for black entertainers.
Right, exactly.
And how
exactly?
How so many people honed their skills on this, again, this Chitlin circuit, this circuit, for lack of a better word, I can't think of a synonym for it, of black nightclubs,
right,
all around the country.
And right, and jazz, I would say, is even you know, a more astonishing example of that, because I think that developed that the equivalent would be jazz in the African American community, and I guess that comic tradition in the Jewish belt, exactly.
Yeah, and these clubs exist. The Chitlin circuit clubs existed, and these places in the Borscht Belt, what do you call them? Not the hotels.
Well, they were hotels.
Resorts.
Yes, and some of them were very elegant hotels.
Yes.
And and lasted really into the 80s, I think. But then now they are defunct, because I think that people don't use that kind of entertainment anymore. People now have, their travel patterns are very different. And I guess Miami is a much more go-to place for the New York Jews than the Catskill Mountains.
Well, another thing too, right, is that you have hotels now that actually allow Jews to stay there.
Yes. So they don't have to make their own, right?
Right.
They don't have to build their own.
Exactly. And that is one of the things, it's fascinating, in American culture, you see thriving minority cultures, and they thrive often because they are excluded from the greater society.
Yes.
And then we look back on them and we go, oh my gosh, like all of these wonderful clubs, the Chitlin Circuit. We here in Michigan, we have an area in the north that was a thriving black culture. It is where African American families went on vacation. It was like the Catskills.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's defunct. Why? Because black families can now go virtually anywhere they want to go. And the same thing, you have this marvelous Yiddish/Jewish culture that thrived in the Catskills. But now we don't need the Catskills. Yes, it's true that there are some places, like you mentioned, Miami. I'm sure there are some places that attract a lot of Jews. But for Jews who don't want to go to Miami, they can go anywhere they want.
And so
with that equality, sadly, it disappears that strong somewhat monolithic culture in that. It's just a part of growing up in America.
Well, this is true, and in fact, we began by talking about Yiddish culture. As long as Jews had their own language, much of the joking and the humor really derived from the Yiddish language and Yiddish culture, and then from the combination of Yiddish and English culture, the way in which sometimes there was a misfit between the two. But then as people stopped speaking Yiddish, and in fact, as Jewish life became less observant, and many, many Jews in the United States now hardly observe Jewish customs at all and get very little Jewish education, the humor becomes much, much thinner as well. You don't have the same base of reference, and you have to make reference to only, I would say, cruder things like, you know, if you watch a lot of the Curb Your Enthusiasm, you watch a lot of the Larry David shows, you see how thin the, you know, the verbal humor actually is. A lot of it has to do with, you know, I don't know, toilets and, you know, sexual innuendo. And once in a while, something about the Holocaust, things like that. Only, you know, only the major things that everybody might know, but all the refinement, you know, all the little things that you might want to laugh at because you are intimately acquainted with things, all of that has been thinned out.
Yes, yes, very true. I want to remind people that you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Professor Ruth Weiss. She is a professor of Yiddish literature, and she is the author of several books, including No Joke, Making Jewish Humor, which is what we are exploring this episode of Common Threads. One of the elements in Jewish humor that I don't know if you'll find elsewhere is that self-deprecating element that essentially is there because, you know what, it's going to hurt a lot less if we do it to ourselves than if somebody else does it. Can you talk to that?
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, that is on all fronts about every perceived weakness. And sometimes these are very hard for other people to understand. I begin my book with a joke that I told in the office of the faculty where I taught, and the reaction to it was very, very interesting. It's about four Europeans who go hiking together, and they get lost, and they run out of food, and then they run out of water, and the Englishman says, "I'm so thirsty, I must have tea," and the Frenchman says, "I'm so thirsty, I must have wine." And the German says, "I'm so thirsty, I must have beer." And the Jew says, "I'm so thirsty, I must have diabetes." So I thought this was a hilarious joke the first time I heard
great.
It. And you know, it is a very common kind of Jewish joke where, you know, there's a kind of one-upsmanship here, or it's a one-downsmanship because, of course, everybody else is thinking on practical, you know, just realistic terms, and the Jew's already 10 steps ahead with his hypochondria or whatever it is.
Yes.
But, you know, there was the secretary was sitting in the office as I told this joke, and she thought it was anti-Semitic. She was not Jewish, but she was working, you know, there with a lot of us who were in Jewish studies. And she said, "You know, if you were not Jewish, I would have thought that joke was anti-Semitic." And she asked me to explain to her why it was not.
Really?
Yeah. And, of course, it never would have occurred to me that one could have thought this. But, you see, because it singles out the Jew at the end, and it seems to be making fun of him, laughing when he says something which is sort of inappropriate, she thought that that indicated that it was anti-Jewish, an anti-Jewish joke. And you know, so there are so many of these jokes which, when they're told by Jews about themselves, sound enormously, you know, comical and terrific. But these are the kind of jokes that every minority could tell about itself. But that really, if somebody else tells the joke about you, you sort of wonder, now, wait a minute, are they laughing at me? And that's the great difference, I guess, joking where you're laughing with the joke teller, or humor where you're laughing at a group. And it's such a subtle difference sometimes, but people recognize one or the other.
Let me tell you a story. I worked at a radio station many years ago, and I happened to be in the studio when one of the other talk show hosts was interviewing over the phone the author of a book, or he was really more of an editor of a book on ethnic humor. And so it was a collection not only of Jewish humor, but of Polish humor, Dutch humor, Italian, it just everything. And I believe that some of the humor in there wasn't really appropriate, if you will. So, you know, there are Jewish jokes and there are anti-Semitic jokes, right? There are, and then you have Polish jokes, which usually are more on the offensive side. They don't have the wit that we're talking about, and they tend to put down Poles, and they're usually not created by Poles. The same thing with the others, like the Italian jokes and things like this. And so I was listening in studio to this going on, and that they were telling all these jokes as we are to some degree today. And one guy and they're having people call in, and one guy called in after the author or editor had gone off the air, and he chastised the talk show host for having this person on, and he said it was offensive. I did not laugh at this, and you shouldn't have people like that on. And the talk show host says, yes, but look, didn't you hear him? Yes, he was telling Polish jokes, he was telling Italian jokes, but he was also telling Jewish jokes, and he's Jewish. And the caller says, yes, and a Jew will do anything to make money.
Oh, my God. Did he set that up as a joke?
No, he was truly.
I'm sure not.
I really believe that that was an anti-Semitic remark that
just sort of came out of him.
Isn't that interesting? And of course, he doesn't see the irony of.
Of course.
Amazing.
Of course.
Oh my gosh.
Well, as soon as you get on my turf, you know, then I won't have any of it. But
yes, exactly.
Well, obviously, I like this. But you see, I called my book "No Joke: Making Jewish Humor," and some people are displeased with me because the last chapter is really called "When Can I Stop Laughing?" and you know, one of the points that I'm making is that there are times when it's not an appropriate reaction to the condition within which you find yourself. And I think that sometimes there's a surfeit, too much goes into the making of Jewish humor that would be better advised going into self-protection of a certain kind or, you know, getting politically more adept than Jews have been in the past. So, I mean, I take Jewish humor very seriously. That's what I'm saying. And even though I laugh and I love it when people tell these wonderful jokes when they're good, and I think it's very healthy to laugh, and the doctors now tell us that it's healthy as well, basically. But you know, the cultivation of humor at the expense of other things is not always such a good idea.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think either one of us would find the book that I'm talking about from almost 40 years ago. I don't think we would find that attractive at all or funny at all because, again, it was really... writing disparagingly and with grand stereotypes.
So
let me ask you very quickly. We only have a few minutes left. The Modern Jewish Canon is another book that you wrote. Is that a book on humor or is that not?
Well, not primarily, but it does have some works in it. The idea there was to describe modern Jewish literature, some of the great works of modern Jewish literature, and to try to choose books which have a really universal and eternal value from the whole array of modern Jewish writing in many languages. So, you know, I used to teach courses of this kind at university. The Great Books course is basically what it is, but this is sort of a Great Jewish Books course. And so it has some of the major authors like Isaac Babel, Isaac Basheva Singer, Saul Bellow, and Franz Kafka. So, you know, I think, you know, it tries to interest people in the idea of great books and trying to get people to read them, which is today getting to be a little bit harder.
It is, isn't it? That's I applaud the work that you're doing because I think that this is very important. I will tell you this, Ruth, that we here in Grand Rapids have just a wonderful Jewish theater. And the I know the people very active. I've actually been in several of their productions, and they take the preservation of Jewish literature very seriously.
Wonderful.
Yeah. It's nice to be in a community that has that. And interestingly enough, the people on the board has been through multiple incarnations, and you now have more non-Jews on the Jewish theater board than Jews, but the mission is still the same.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
How wonderful is that? Well,
well, listen, Ruth, we are down to the wire again, but I want to thank you so much for your time with us today and last week as well.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you and with someone who shares this interest in this terrific topic.
Certainly. You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. Our guest today is Professor Ruth Weiss, who has taught Yiddish literature and is the author of No Joke, Making Jewish Humor. Please join us again next week here on Common Threads.